Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
Tommy, have you noticed that there are a lot of Teslas out there that are like wrapped or that have funky wheels on them? You know why that is?
Why is that?
Because I think Tesla does not do enough to differentiate their models. I think people are getting bored of Teslas, right? There's like 4 or 5 colors and 2 interiors and 3 wheels. That's it.
I'm not sure you spend enough time on Twitter, Dad, because I think people are more passionate about their Teslas than any other brand currently available. So how dare we come out with a video that is titled what?
This is called The Top 5 Electric Cars That Are Better Than a Tesla.
I'm not sure that is a possible thing to say on the internet in 2021.
Look, maybe, all right, I'll give you this, Tommy. I think Tesla's electronics, right, their operating system is one generation ahead of everybody else. But that doesn't mean their cars are a generation ahead. In fact, I would say their car build quality is one generation behind, if not more, everybody else. So we're not talking about the infotainment. We're not talking about the way that you interact with a Tesla, which I believe is the best in the business. When you buy a Tesla, you basically name the car, you jump on the app, and it all works, right? Your phone is your key. You control the car with your app, you go supercharge it, and it talks directly to the supercharger. It's all seamless. Everything works. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about cars that are more fun to drive. So, you know, this is a car that speaks to your heart, not your head.
That's an interesting take. Now, I think we're going to get quite a lot of criticism for this, but we're also going to pay attention to value for money. So we're going to discuss some used options that are incredibly good value for what you get, and we'll talk about, do you really need all that range to fit your lifestyle? So we're going to have a really fun discussion and talk about the top 5 EVs that should be on your short list that might fit your lifestyle better than a Tesla of any kind.
Now, there's 2 points I want to make before we jump into this list, okay? First, I have been lucky enough to drive every, I think, electric car on the market because it is my job. So I am not doing this from reading stories or from, you know, digging down deep in the internet. I've actually been behind the wheel of all of these cars, or I've had hands-on all these cars. We've owned these cars. So either owners, drivers, or one of these cars has not been driven by us, because you can't drive it in America. But nevertheless, I've stood next to it. I've sat in actually both of them. So it is coming from a point of experience, not from a point of fandom.
Okay.
And the other thing is, dude, I was just in Palo Alto, right? Every other car is a white Tesla Model 3. I'm sorry, but I think a lot of Tesla owners are just sick of seeing themselves driving down the road in places like Boulder and Palo Alto and even LA, because there's just like the same Tesla everywhere. You know, there is literally, what, 6 colors, 2 interiors, and 2 different wheels you can get on a Tesla. And I think that's why either Tesla needs to start differentiating their models within the model lineup. So I'm not talking about X, Y, and 3. I'm talking about, like, you know, a performance Model Y basically is an underline with a spoiler and red brake calipers. And, you know, their current customers are coming from a world of special editions, of, you know, cars with AMG and M badges that scream power. And yet with Tesla, it's all a little too much, like, you know, too like stealthy speed. You know what I'm saying? I get the love of that, but at the same time, if I spent $128,000 for a Tesla Model S Plaid, I want it to say more than just, you know, a weird steering wheel, a yoke that lets people know that I've got the top dog Tesla.
So let's jump right into the list. What's the number five Tesla alternative?
All right, I've got my list right here. The number five, we actually just drove from California all the way to Boulder. It's, of course, the Porsche Taycan, and it is a phenomenal driver's car. It's a Porsche of electric cars, if that means anything.
That's absolutely right. Now, you pay for it, of course. So when we tested, it was well over $100,000. But it is a four-door super sedan that comes in many, many different trims. You can also get it in a station wagon and starts, you know, 80, 90K. It goes all the way up well into, like, the high 100s. I think it'll even go above 200, right, if you get a Turbo S?
You can get up to that speed. Yeah, the one I would – the sweet spot for me is it the Gran Turismo, the station wagon that's a little lifted and basically is about a $99,000 car. That's the one that I would get. You know, the difference between a 4S and a Turbo and a Turbo S is all, I think, you know, mainly software-based. So all three of those – drive very similarly, but of course you're uncorking more power as you get into the Turbo and the Turbo S. Not as much, of course, as a Model S Plaid, right? That is now the current king of the electric car, 0-60 world and quarter mile world. It is the fastest production car, I think, outside of the Rivets. I know people say Rivac Navara, but outside of that, it's the quickest car.
Yeah, that Rimac is pretty insane. But I want to talk about the Taycan because the one you like, the Cross Turismo, is very unusual in the EV world because it's a station wagon, which doesn't really exist in the world of electric cars. And it's a brilliant looking car. The Taycan is probably the best car I've ever driven, new car I've ever driven from a dynamic standpoint. The range is not nearly as good as the competition from the American company Tesla, but you know, realistically, we were targeting like 250 miles of range on the 4S model that we tested, which I think is good enough for most people on a regular basis.
Yeah, in typical German fashion, the Germans sandbag the range, and let's face it, Tesla overstates the range. We've had a Model Y for a year, and we were supposed to get close to 291 miles on a charge. We never got close to that. More realistically, it was like 250, 260. On the Taycan, was the exact opposite. I want to say it was like 224, right, official EPA numbers. And the other problem, Tommy, is the EPA numbers are kind of wishy-washy right now. Their whole test cycle is based on, you know, ICE cars for all you electric car folk out there, and it doesn't work really well with electric cars.
So range aside, what would you tell the folks that say this has no ability to compete with a Tesla because you can't use the Tesla supercharger network, which is the best in the world?
I'd say wait a month or two, which apparently it's going to open up to non-Tesla users. And even people said, well, it's going to happen in Europe first because Europe has a different plug, right? They have a CCS plug. So you can actually make it do it much easier than here because here's Tesla's plug is
proprietary.
Proprietary. Thank you, Tommy. Appreciate you helping me out of my old age. But yeah, I think that, look, if you want the Teslas, I also think from a suspension tuning point of view, are probably also a generation behind most automakers, right? The Model Y performance that we had was 0-60 in 3.5 seconds in a straight line, but around a corner, it just, you know, it was that old kind of suspension tuning that a lot of manufacturers have gotten past where if you want to make it fast, you got to make it firm, right? So it's like it beats you up just because it's been lowered a little bit and it's stiff so that it goes around a corner well. But with modern cars, especially with, you know, electronic, with the electronics the way they are, with suspension that can be electronically tuned, you can have both. You can have your cake and you can eat it too. So you can have a soft and comfy ride, and then you could put it in a twisty road and dial it down to Sport or Sport Plus or Super Secret Sport Plus Plus, whatever the manufacturer decides, and actually have it perform really well around a corner. Tesla hasn't found that soft spot. And I know you're saying, well, like some of the Tesla cars, like the X and the Model S, have air suspension. Same problem, Tommy. It works really well in a straight line, not so much around a circle or around a track. The other thing about Teslas is they're heavy, dude. And they wear their weight low, but they're heavy.
Not that the Taycan is a lightweight.
It's also heavy.
Let's be honest about that, but I like the Taycan specifically.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. Go ahead.
I like the Taycan specifically because of its build quality and its fit and finish. That was one of the best assembled vehicles I've ever been in. Just everything you touch and squeeze and grab and push and pull feels like it is made out of granite. It is super satisfying to use. The tech is a little bit more cumbersome than something like a Model S, but the overall experience, the customizability, the availability of trims, and the ability to kind of make it your own to exactly your taste does put it a step ahead of the Model S in my mind.
Yeah, the other thing I want to say, Tommy, is, you know, for all you guys and gals out there who, like, don't believe in electric cars, you're probably not listening to this podcast, but if you are and you think to yourself, you know, there's just too many compromises. I grew up with a supercharger or turbochargers, and I grew up working on my car, and it's a big old American V8 is, you know, with push rods is what, you know, is I want. There is this kind of, I want to say, almost chill tranquility that's very different. It's a very different vibe in an electric car, right? You feel like the outside world is outside and you're your own little cocoon. And when I get behind the wheel of an electric car, I just feel this, like, you know, Serenity Now from that old Seinfeld episode. I kind of feel like that just washes over me. And I don't know if it's because there isn't an engine thumping away under the hood or if it's because the car, you know, makes very little noise. And so all you end up hearing is like tire noise or wind noise, right? And you don't hear the exhaust note, but it is a very different driving experience. And in a hectic and stressful world, it's much less stressful. Do you feel the same way? Did you feel that when we drove the Taycan across the country?
Well,
I made it more. Okay. We had range anxiety. So yeah, is that why you're laughing?
No, I actually feel quite the opposite. I don't have any range anxiety whatsoever.
Okay.
In the port. I mean, the deal with range is I think it's the most overrated thing when shopping for electric cars. People buy range in electric cars for the road trip that they never take. I mean, everyone I talk to is like, oh, it only goes 200 miles on a single charge. And my response is, if you have a place to charge it up at home, when is the last time you realistically commute 200 miles on a daily basis? If you need to go further, you will use the CCS or the fast charging network out there, and it will take longer than a gasoline car. But realistically, I mean, most folks are not taking weekend road trips. Most folks are not driving across country regularly. I personally am under the belief that 80 miles is plenty of range for most folks, let alone 200. And I've lived with cars with, you know, 50, 60 miles of range, and it's just been fine. Like, you forget about it if you have a place to plug at home, you know, when you go to sleep. So that is not really an issue. The Serenity thing, I don't know. I think that it's just as exciting. I think that there's like been this big divide now where people think that you need to have pistons to have fun, right? Like, yeah, Hypercars and sports cars, they need to have pistons and they need to make noise and burble. And yeah, that's fine. I get it. To be honest with you, the new, and this is just because,
oh, I'm, you're always honest.
Yeah. Well, I'm just 100 years old. I don't think that any of the brand new production gasoline or diesel vehicles are really all that exciting. I mean, I love the old stuff. You know, if you want an exciting and you want pops and burbles, get something from the 60s or the 70s. But brand new, just get the best technology you can.
I'm with you. I mean, you take your run-of-the-mill crossover, which everybody drives, right? Be that a RAV4, a CRV, you know, a Tucson. It's not the most exciting thing.
But even an enthusiast car like a Miata, right? Uh-huh. I just don't think that the engine in a Miata is really all that enticing. I think it's fine, but it's not incredible. You know, a lot of Mustangs, right? Like a
Now you're into sacred ground.
Well, a four-cylinder turbo Mustang, not that great. A V8 5-liter does sound pretty good.
Yes.
But would that be any worse if it was electric?
The Mach-E?
No, that is not a Mustang. All right,
well, let's transition from that conversation before we have all you muscle car fans with pitchforks and knives coming out to, you know, to get us. But let's talk about actually the Mach-E and the Volkswagen ID.4. Now, we did not include these on our list, and there's a reason for that, right? So to me, a Tesla is a better car than both of those. Volkswagen seems like kind of Volkswagen's version of a Tesla, and the Mach-E kind of seems like Ford's version of a Tesla. I felt like they didn't like go above the benchmark that Tesla set. They kind of met that benchmark, if you know what I mean.
Well, if you want to be a little bit more frank about it, I was really bummed out when I had the ID.4 because I was super stoked to drive it. But I think from a packaging standpoint, it isn't all that impressive. From a value standpoint, it isn't all that impressive. From a drivability standpoint, it isn't all that fun or impressive. I really felt like,
I mean, you got to give it to Tesla. If you set aside the fact that they're expensive and getting more expensive, right? The fact is that electric cars do have instant torque, and that is one of the more engaging, fun, thrilling things you can do in an electric car is to floor it. And neither, at least the current Mach-E or the ID4, are very quick.
Well,
there's a GT coming, right? But that's not out yet.
So I think that actually from a straight line performance standpoint, I thought just a Mach-E long range all-wheel drive is plenty fast. But it just feels kind of numb and not very full of soul. Specifically those two cars. I actually think some of the compliance cars are a lot more fun and soulful to drive than even an ID4 or Mach-E. Now, the Mach-E is more fun than the 94. I would definitely get the Ford over the Volkswagen if I had the choice between the two. But like you said, Dad, I would get any Tesla over either of them, because it feels like they are trying to be too Tesla-like. They don't have their own personalities.
Yeah, so I think, you know, I think the electric car, you can look at it two ways. It's like right brain over left brain, like passion over logic, right? And to me, there's not a lot of passion in the Volkswagen. I'm not saying it's an appliance, but, you know, I was talking about Serenity now, but that could also become kind of like you're driving the pod car from the Woody Allen movie, right, where there is not a lot of, like, joy or fun. And Volkswagen did, to be fair, try to invest it with some whimsy, right, like the play icon on the accelerator pedal and the pause icon on the brake. But that's not what makes a car whimsical or fun.
That's great in a brochure, but you're never like, ooh, I wonder if this thing has a pause button on the pedal.
But I'm saying, they, Tesla's smart to know that they've got all this torque. Or maybe it's not just, you know, maybe we're painting with too broad of a brush. I was listening to a bunch of podcasts, and the fact is that, like, Tesla does do a really good job with their powertrain, right? They're not buying Bosch motors. They're building their own motors, and so maybe a Tesla motor does inherently have more power and more torque than, you know, something that a manufacturer buys and then assembles, right?
But
and we've just seen that with Ford, with the top, right? Ford did not build their own hard top for the Bronco. They used Webasto. To be fair, Webasto builds 99.9% of all soft tops across the world. But, you know, you have to give Tesla props for, you know, building their own motor and not going to a motor manufacturer and outsourcing that.
I think, though, you're not...
And batteries, too. Well, batteries are LG and Panasonic. It depends.
We're on two very different pages. Like, your issue with, like, the ID4 is it's too slow. That's not my issue with it. I just don't think it's very engaging to drive.
No, it's not too slow. It's not quick enough. It doesn't...
Well, that's okay.
It doesn't leverage the torque of an electric
but
car.
But the Mach-E does do a good job of that.
And I haven't driven the GT. I wasn't blown away by the long range. I thought it was fine. But coming out of a Tesla, which will do, even the slow ones, right, the long range ones do under 4 seconds for the most part.
I think if you compare long range Model Y to long range Mach-E, 0 to 60 times are pretty much identical. They're very, very similar. And if you compare, like, the base Model 3 to those, they're much quicker. The 0 to 60 thing is plenty quick. That's not never been my issue. I just feel like the ID4 especially is just a really numb kind of thing to drive. The Mach-E is a little bit better, but I do feel like they are trying to be interpretations of a Model 3 or a Model Y versus their own kind of unique vehicle, and that is my issue with them.
Yeah, and Ford took a big step with the Mach-E in its infotainment, with its sync system. It's much better. It's much more, well, dare I say, a Tesla-like, Tommy, right? It's much more intuitive, almost like, you know, the magic sauce in an iPhone, whereas the Volkswagen system is the exact opposite. It's very fussy and finicky and confusing. And so that's why at the beginning of this conversation I said that Tesla's at least one generation ahead of all the manufacturers when it comes to infotainment.
Maybe you'll like the GTX more, the all-wheel drive.
Yeah, I can't wait. I'm not going. I think one of our team is going pretty soon, but I'm looking forward to that. I think leveraging the all-wheel drive, and I know it's a weird thing. We live in Colorado where you can't go, you know, all year without all-wheel drive, so it'll be nice to have an all-wheel drive car. But even in places like Florida where it rains, I just love the sure-footedness of having an all-wheel drive vehicle.
Well, let's move on from the ID4 and the Mach-E and discuss number four, which are vehicles we are very excited about, I believe, but not ones we've necessarily driven.
Yeah, so that's the IONIQ 5 and the EV6. So one's the Hyundai and one's the Kia. And they built a brand new platform for both of these vehicles. And the platform is going to serve from everything from a crossover to like a family hauler, right, to a three-row vehicle, to maybe even a sports car at some point. But it's kind of a cool platform because, first of all, it's almost wider than it is longer. So it's more of a square. It's longer than actually the wheelbase, not the vehicle, but the wheelbase is longer than the Range Rover on both of those cars. And you know, the cool thing about electric vehicles, it gives manufacturers a chance to rethink what a car should be, right? It's like turning the page. Like, you can have a brand new chapter and you can say to yourself, let's rethink everything about a car, not just do another version with a bigger engine or more wheelbase or a bigger trunk or whatever it is that we've been doing for the last 100 years, right? Let's actually rethink how people are using cars, and let's rethink how people approach cars, how they interact with cars, what their needs are. And I think both Hyundai and Kia, who are just on a roll right now, did that with both those cars. And so, for instance, there's just tons and tons of room. They did something that I think Ford did in the Lightning, but Tesla should have been doing from the start, is you can actually use them as a power source for your electric appliances. So there's a little widget you can stick into the power port, and then you get two 110 outlets. Yeah. So you can do things like, you know, go camping and power whatever you want to power off that vehicle. Also, the infotainment and the design of the vehicle is very unique and very interesting. So in the EV, I don't know if the EV6 is it, but the Ioniq 5 does it, where the center console, like in a Suburban, actually moves backward and forward, so you can move it in and out of the way. That's pretty darn cool. And then in the Ioniq 5, on the left side of the vehicle, there's a little magnetic pad that you can like put sticky notes on. I'm not sure why you need that, but once again, it's rethinking how you use your vehicle. Just a whole bunch of like really cool, innovative little tricks like that. And changing the proportions of the vehicle around. And then, of course, coming out with what they're saying is going to be, you know, an affordable vehicle with at least 300 miles of range that's going to, you know, bring the competition right to the Model Y.
The reason I'm excited about these two is not from like a charging standpoint, which is supposed to be incredible, not from a range standpoint, but I think that they're really pushing the limits, like you said, on kind of design and the way that you can kind of sculpt and form a brand new car that's electric. I especially like the Ioniq 5 with its retro design vibes. I just think it looks fantastic, and the production one looks to be just as cool as the concept, which is just woohoo.
Yeah, like they're having fun with it, and they've started deliveries in Europe already. So in Europe, you can actually, in Norway, where it's very popular, you can actually go and get yourself one. And we're going to be looking at deliveries sometime in October here. So they're not far away from actually having them, at least the Ioniq 5 will come out first, having them this year, having them here in America.
Yeah, they just nailed the design on both of them. Those two companies are just killing it across everything they do, be it the Santa Cruz, the little pickup truck, the hybrids that they offer, the value that they offer.
The Kona N,
the Palisade, the Telluride, and now, of course, the new Ioniq brand. And
Blaster N.
Moving into the Kia's EV6, I think, once again, a fantastic design that's supposed to be quick. So they really are taking this electrification thing seriously.
And they're like having fun with it, right? So like the Ioniq 5 is like this retro kind of, you know, the dot matrix is a theme for that thing. So it's got all these cool little angles and dots everywhere, right? And then Kia said, you know what? You guys got the retro thing going on, so we're going to do the sporty thing, right? So they made their car kind of swoopy and low, and it's got this really cool LED light that's integrated into the spoiler, right? So you can backlight the spoiler. Just, you know, just like you can see, like, they're like, once again, they're using this opportunity to rethink what a car should be versus just, okay, now instead of, you know, 450 horsepower, you got 475.
Right. Yeah. So should we go to number three?
Yeah, let's go to number three because this is a really interesting one, Tommy. And it's one that is actually out there and you can buy and that we've owned.
So this is a weird one, and it's probably one that you're not going to initially agree with, but we'll try to sway you into our direction, specifically because of the value they offer on the used market. And we are, of course, mentioning the BMW i3, which kind of did what Kia and Hyundai did with the incredibly unique design on the inside and the outside, but did it all the way back in 2013 and 2014. So the i3 was an all-electric car, or a range-extended car. I think still is the only mass-produced range-extended car ever to exist. And it was not a massive success straight out of the bat.
People thought it was ugly.
Well, it was expensive. It was too expensive.
Yeah, I mean, even now, $50,000 for one.
Don't buy a new one. So the deal with the i3 is that it was a marvel in terms of construction, design, ergonomics. It was just probably too far ahead of what consumers wanted.
You have this kind of carbon fiber
monocoque. The whole thing is like this reinforced carbon plastic.
And these very thin wheels to have low rolling resistance. This really open and airy cabin. Use of all kinds of different materials, right? Synthetic materials.
Phenomenal, yeah. For example, like you step in and there's no B-pillar. You had these weird doors that kind of hinged the wrong way, which people didn't like. But the seats, not shared with any BMW. The steering wheel had this crazy two-spoke design with this floating instrument cluster and this floating little digital screen in the middle, and it was just like something out of the Jetsons. But it was expensive and didn't go far enough on a charge, and I think that's why people kind of discounted it as being a little bit of a science experiment.
Yeah, but I think the people who bought them and who drive them fell in love with them for what they were. It was one of those cars that grows on you over time, right? And the range extender is kind of a weird but cool science experiment where you have a little Kymco, and that's another weird thing. Why didn't they use like a BMW motorcycle engine instead of use a Korean motorcycle engine, 600cc, to give you more range in case you run out of gasoline? But it's also brilliant because you can run that thing as an EV all day long. There's no opportunity to run it as a hybrid, so don't be confused. The engine only kicks on when you run out of electricity, when you're to zero. So it's not like a hybrid where the two work in conjunction.
Well, it's supposed to literally be a range extender. So the idea is you run it on electricity, and if you happen to run out, it's just enough of a backup generator to get you to the next charging point. But very affordable nowadays, and that is why I think it is in a lot of ways better than a Tesla, because Teslas are phenomenal vehicles, but they still cater to an income bracket and a wealth class that is above most folks.
Yeah.
So even used Teslas are expensive.
So I might be talking out of turn here, but I think I got this right. So the reason like our adoption is 2.5%, that's all electric vehicles, hybrids, plug-in hybrids, and EVs. And Norway's is like 60%, is because Norway also gives you a tax credit, but they don't give you a tax credit. They give you a point of sale credit. So the way it works here in America, of course, is when you buy it, well, Tesla's gone through all this, but let's say you buy one that still has it, which would be, for instance, a Mini.
Yeah, Cooper SE.
You're right. You buy Mach-E that still has 84. Their tax. They haven't burned through the tax credit. If you qualify for that tax credit, the government gives you back the $7,500, the federal government, that is a tax credit. But why not just put that money on the hood? Why do you have to qualify? So the second you have to qualify, what you're doing is you're opening it up only to wealthy folk.
Well, yeah. So like for me, if I wanted to go buy an ID4 right now, I would have to pay the initial price of whatever it is, $45,000, which I can't afford. And then I wouldn't get $7,500 back on my taxes because my tax liability isn't $7,500. It's just a couple of thousand dollars. So I wouldn't really see much of an advantage. So you're right that it absolutely is set up to cater to more wealthy individuals. And on the used market, you can't get that credit whatsoever.
Yeah, let's say you go buy a Volkswagen ID.4, right? And let's say it costs $35,000, which it will. Wouldn't it be much smarter that we walk into the dealership, and here in Colorado, we get 3.5 back as well from the state tax credit. So instead of being $35,000, that car literally costs you write them a check for $25,000. That's fair, right? Everybody gets that.
Yeah, that would be a cool system.
Yeah, that would be a cool system. And if you're into the fact that electric cars are not just better for the environment, but also cheaper to own over the long run because you don't have to do things like change brakes or fill fluids or change the oil, then that would make a lot of sense to a lot of people. But this convoluted system where you have to have it come off your taxes the following year is just, like I say, it's a giveaway to wealthy folk. And we've taken advantage of that. We'll be the first to say that. Our company buys these electric cars when we get that credit. But it should just be point of sale. So we're talking about
the i3. So yes. New, not a great value. I will be the first to admit it. But used, we had one. It was a 14. We bought it for $14,000.
$14,500.
It had no miles on it because they never have many miles on them. And it was seriously the best used car I've ever experienced. It was reliable. It was fun to drive. It was pretty quick.
It was actually good in the snow. It was rear-wheel drive. Rear-wheel drive is always better. Yeah.
It was just a phenomenal little car. The range extender came in handy a few times. Not all that many, though, because once again, you just plug it in at home. It only goes, like ours went 75 miles with a really early one on a single charge, but it was great. Really loved that little car. Andre's wife actually bought it from the company. She's been driving it every single day. for the last, I don't know, what is it, 6 months or a year now?
Yeah.
And loves the little thing. Love the i3. And I strongly recommend you go check one out if you want to dip your toes into the EV world, because the second you do, you probably won't want to sell one.
Okay, so let's talk about that car that's over your shoulder. I can't pronounce it. You're going to have to say it.
Yeah, the Wuling Huanghuang Mini EV. Now, this
It's not our number two, but cars like it are number two. So tell, you know, that is the most popular electric car in China. They sell 30,000 of those every month. 30,000, Tommy.
Yeah, oh, no. Yeah, and it's basically, well, it's basically a shoebox. Now, it's not all that impressive on any kind of spec except for one. So it's quite slow. It doesn't go very far.
Well, it's cheap. It's $4,000.
That's the impressive spec, though. It's a brand new car you can buy for $4,000. And it's a real car with an actual interior and you know, real, relatively usable range. But that's why it's so popular, is because it's so cheap.
And it's built by GM.
Well, sort of. It's Wuling Huanghuang is like, it's got this joint partnership with this company called SAIC, but it's immensely popular in China.
Yeah, I think they're actually production constrained, 30,000 cars every month.
But you can't buy one in the States, Dan.
No, you can't, but you can buy basically the equivalent of that. So let's face it, Tommy, even the cheapest electric car, which right now is, it might be either the Leaf or the Mini, depending. I forget, the Leaf may have just gone down.
Yeah, it's the Leaf.
And by the way, the Leaf is
bad.
Not on our list. Yeah,
sorry. I think the Leaf,
sorry, Nissan.
Not a great car.
I think the Leaf did a pretty good job in setting back electric cars around the world. It was supposed to be like the Model T of electric cars,
right,
and instead,
instead
they didn't climate control the batteries, and it became the poster child of what happens when
the
batteries go bad.
All right, sorry. Huanghuang Mini EV. Estimated range 110 on the NEDC range cycle, which is just wrong. So it's not 110, but it's probably like 70. 62 mile an hour top speed. There you go. Now, as you were mentioning, Dad, you can't get anything this cheap brand new in the States, right?
But you can get close. You can. Number two is basically any California compliance car. So basically, you know, 5 years ago, 6 years ago, California specified that a certain percentage of, I think it was a certain percentage or certain number of cars that each manufacturer sold in California had to be electric. And so the manufacturers went and basically built electric car versions of their regular cars. I'm talking about the Soul EV, the Spark EV, the Fiat 500 EV. I can go down the list. There's a bunch of them. But any of those cars now are dirt cheap. And the reason that people didn't want them, and the reason that people still are afraid of them, is because they, let's face it, they all have less than 100 miles of range. But this is the thing. Once you kind of have, you have to have this electric car journey, Tommy. Sure, you take a journey with me? You want to take a journey?
Yeah,
with
let's
me?
Take your journey.
All right, so let's go car shopping. Let's say you're, you know, Joe or Jane, car buyer. What's the first thing you're going to want out of an electric car?
How far it'll go.
Exactly. You're going to, I need it to go. You know, it's like you want something because that's what the current thing is. But logically, the current thing isn't something that is used to its maximum, right? Very few people will actually drive a car, you know, 320 miles nonstop across country if that's the range of your car, right? More likely what you'll do is you'll drive it to work and then you'll drive it home, or you drive it to the store and then you drive it home, or you drive it to church, you drive it home, right? Or you drive it to grandma's and drive it home, right? And all those little trips are like, you know, 10, 15, 20, 25 miles. And think about this. Let me help you make that journey, Tommy, okay? Here's the way you think about it, right? Your house is the gas station. How cool is that?
Right.
That's it. That's all you have to think of. Your house is the gas station. You come home, you plug it in, you fill it up. Your house is the gas station. And once you get that kind of mentality into your head, you will not need 350 miles of range. You will be fine with 100 or less.
So the compliance cars are called compliance cars because basically California came to the big companies a little while ago and said, hey, you can keep selling your big V8s, but you got to sell some electric cars instead. And then the companies are like, oh my God, what do we do? So they took typically small hatchbacks, ripped out the gasoline engines, threw in some batteries and an electric motor, and sold them mostly at a loss. I think most of the car companies...
Most of them were leased, actually.
Yeah, but
like
most
the, I must
of
say
them...
The Smart EV was like $99 a month.
Yeah, and they were... But if you wanted to buy one, they were just too expensive. And I've heard reports even that like these companies did not want to sell these cars because they were losing money in every single one. But California said, sucks, you got
to
sell them.
I mean, they were all like 30 to 40. They weren't cheap.
No.
At least cheaper, but they weren't cheap to buy.
So let's go down. So like Kia Soul EV is one of them.
I didn't like that one. That was the only one I actually didn't like.
I liked Soul EV.
It was, you know what they did with that one to get the most range? That one, I think, had like 85. It had the most out of all of them. Basically, they took away the fun part, which is the acceleration.
So Kia Soul EV, Smart EV, especially the
we own that one.
First one we got in the States is brilliant, fantastic. Fiat 500e.
That's, I think, my favorite of them all.
Yep.
It's the most torquey. It's the most fun to drive.
Spark EV is my favorite.
We own that right now. That one is like a Fiat 500EV, except it's got four doors, and you can put like four people in it for reals.
Focus Electric is another one. But the deal with these cars is you can Nissan Leaf, believe it or not, is not one. That was a ground up, and that was just a mess. And the i3 is not one either. That was also ground up. But the compliance cars can typically be purchased between like $6,000 and $8,000. Everyone is freaked out about what happens when the battery craps out.
Yeah.
Unless you're buying a Leaf, for the most part, these batteries are not probably going to crap out on you. Do a little bit of a research on it, but as long as the batteries are climate controlled, as most are, they last a long time. And
8 to 10 years is a good bet.
I think that but keep in mind, Dan, most of these cars are 8-year warranties.
Exactly.
So even if your battery does crap out, there's a good chance.
And there's another one I wouldn't buy because the range is too. We just saw it, believe it or not. We were driving and we just saw it. It's the rarest of all Mitsubishis.
Oh, the iMiEV?
Yeah, that's another one.
Also not a compliant. That was also ground up.
That's a K car.
Weirdly enough. Yeah. That one's fun though.
Because that one had shadow mode and fast charging.
Yeah, that one's just weird.
But it had only like 50 miles of range. That one a little
too
little.
Too limited.
That was too limited. Yeah.
But get one of these compliance cars for $7,000. I think it's a much more reasonable ask an American household to hold on to their Tahoe and the Suburban. Don't sell that primary vehicle and go buy an ID4. Like, that's a big call. Not a lot of American families are going to do that, but maybe replace a second or a third car with one of these dinky EVs. Buy one for $6,000, drive it for a year, and then sell it for $6,000. Great idea.
You know, people aren't going to listen to us. What's going to happen? I predict, Tommy, what's going to happen?
No one's going to listen to us.
No one's going to listen to us. We understand that. So that's great because we'll keep buying them and loving them. But what's going to happen is at some point that pendulum's going to swing, right? And it's going to go from, I don't want an electric car to, I got to have one right now. And those cars are going to become very valuable.
Especially the 500e is a fantastic little car.
Especially in the orange.
Yeah, very well engineered, actually. People love them. Like, from the owners I've talked to, dead reliable.
And can I make a direct appeal to you, Stellantis? I understand that Fiat did not succeed to the point that you wanted it to here in America. But bring the frickin' 500e here, the new one. It's brilliant. It's beautiful. And Honda, same to you. Why are you just selling that little electric Honda in Europe? It is so cool. Of course, me and Tommy are small car fans. But nevertheless, if you're serious about, you know, selling electric cars, don't leave the cool stuff in Europe. Bring it here. People will buy it.
They are too expensive, though. That's the issue. See, these used 500e's are great because they're $5,000. But new when they're $35,000,
then you lease them.
Then you lease them. That's true.
Exactly.
So, one more thing: very few of these cars actually have fast charging, so don't road trip them. Ideally, you'll have a gasoline car to road trip. But for just putting around your little city or town, you can't beat them for
zip zip
for less money. I think they're super fun to drive. They've got a lot of character just because they're kind of bad, but I love them. I think they're really great.
Like our Spark has a lot of torque steer because it puts a lot of torque through the front wheel.
Yeah, it's not brilliantly engineered, but that's what gives them such big personalities.
You know what? I hate climate change because the word is wrong. It's global warming. Just, you know, don't make it politically palatable by calling, some places are going to get colder. No, we're all burning alive. And right now, Colorado is experiencing, unfortunately, the side effects of that, which is this incredible hazy smoke cloud. Last week, our city was the most polluted city in the world, Tommy, Denver, right? And I got to tell you, driving around in that little Spark, I felt much better about the fact that I wasn't helping to make it even more polluted.
And one more thing to mention, too. For all those folks saying, well, I'm not going to drive an EV because of lithium mines. Well, then don't buy a new one. Go buy a used one. You're doing way more for the environment for buying a used one. Reduce, reuse, recycle, right?
Yeah, I know. I'm so tired of all these.
And even if you look at the science behind lithium mines, as long as you're driving your car for more than like a year or two, you quickly offset the environmental impacts of the lithium mines.
You know, you're just moving it downstream. You're getting coal power and you're using it to power.
Even if your car is 100% powered by coal, by the way, it still is better off for the environment.
Right.
There's so much research behind this.
Yeah, I know, because when you pour gas, which is a very usable and useful thing, like making plastics, which of course are their own issue, but nevertheless, they're useful. You know, most of that energy, the inherent energy in the gasoline, doesn't go to power your car. It goes up to basically heat the engine and the car and the rest of the world. So it's not a very efficient way of converting dead dinosaurs into forward motion, right?
Yep.
So yeah, even if you're not using solar or wind or geothermal, if you're in Iceland, right, to generate electricity, which a lot of people are actually.
Well, okay, now everyone's going to be mad at us, so let's move to number one.
All right, what's number
one? Everyone's just going to be furious in the comments. Number one is the car we just bought, which once again doesn't sound great on paper, but is great in the real world. It is, I think, the most fun EV out there ever made, actually, in my opinion. And that is the brand new Mini Cooper SE, the electric one.
Yeah, we had an email from a viewer or a listener who went and actually test drove one because we bought it. And he, you know what he didn't like?
What he did not like?
He did not like the fact that there was a sun visor on the left side.
Well, that is a silly thing not to like because that sun visor is phenomenal. It's got two sun visors for the driver's.
Yeah, he said it blocked
in front,
his view.
One on the side.
He did not like the seats. He said they were too constraining. I can see that, but they're cool.
Okay, well, you're not doing a good job of selling why it's
I'm just saying, car. I'm just saying, I feel like it wasn't the car that he didn't like. I feel like he went into that test drive not wanting the car, and then came out with a bunch of silly reasons not to buy it. But, you know, look, we had a Model Y for a year. I never drove it for fun, never took it for, like, a joyride. We drove that Mini SE from Albuquerque 500 miles, and that same night I took it for a joyride. It's like I think BMW or Mini stumbled into accidentally a really, really fun little car, right? Sometimes manufacturers set out to actually build cool, fun little cars, and sometimes they stumble into it. And the reason I say stumble into it is because it uses basically the general components from the BMW i3, right? The battery, the motor, the kind of the powertrain. And it's not specifically designed to be an electric car, right? They stuffed batteries into a Mini chassis. But somehow, when you make the car small, agile, and quick, and put a big, fat steering wheel on it, and then lift it a little bit to give it a little bit better suspension, magic happens, and that car is just a joy to drive.
Oh, I loved it. I love it. It's also pretty affordable. So starts at $29,900 if you can find one of those. Get one of the cheap ones, or you can get a loaded one like we do with the nice sunroofs and the cool wheels and, you know, all the funky bits. But from a fun to drive standpoint, obviously doesn't have the 2 second acceleration of a Model S Plaid. But in the corners, it's more fun than a Model S Plaid. It's always more fun to drive a little car fast and a big car slow. And I just love it. It's got so much personality. It feels a lot like the Taycan in terms of build quality. Everything you touch is BMW or better. And what I mean is all of the materials are beautiful. Everything is so well bolted together. Just a phenomenal thing to be in and to drive around in.
Can I take you on another journey?
Oh, another journey?
Yeah, two journeys.
Two journeys in one day?
Yeah, as an automotive journalist, like you say, I've driven pretty much every new car over the last 10 years. I'm not saying it to be boastful. I'm just saying that because that's my job. So I think I have a lot of experience with a lot, and so do you, Tom, with a lot of different cars. And once upon a time, when like Tesla built its giant screen and everything was virtual, like, you know, like this phone, I thought it was way cool, right? Oh, wow, no more buttons except for the two round ones on the steering wheel. Everything is integrated into the screen, and it's all logically laid out like in an iPhone. But you know what, Tommy? Now that I'm back in the Mini, I really love, because I missed it, having smart physical buttons that actually do stuff, right? That actually things happen when you flick a switch, or things happen when you push a button versus just all this, like, you know, virtually swiping or virtually, you know, enabling. It's really cool, like that little start toggle switch where you actually push the toggle switch down and you get that doom doom, right? That BMW sound. It's just fun. Switches are fun, and you know, they can also be a pain in the ass, right? If they're not logically laid out. But my favorite generation, for instance, of Porsche, is that previous generation where it had all those switches. It was like sitting in a 747, right? It had this whole cluster of switches going on either side of the gear shift lever. And I love that much more than I love all the virtual stuff. There's just something very gratifying and satisfying and tactile about actually having a switch that does something. And if it's logically laid out, it's much easier to understand. And the two, of course, that are absolutely like hardcore, you have to have them, are the volume switch and the tuning knob. I spend so much time in a brand new car, and doesn't have to be a Tesla, it can be a Kia, it could be a Ford, just trying to figure out, you know, where to change the radio station. Once upon a time, you'd push a button and it was like, yeah,
there's the radio.
Now it's like, what's the source? Is it your phone? Is it, you know, is it Sirius XM? Is it, you know, FM? Is it AM? Is it the satellite? You know, and I'm like, no, just let me just push a button and play music.
Yeah, I think it's a, if you don't need the range of like a Model 3, it's more affordable, it's better made. It doesn't charge as fast, obviously, which has to do with the range thing. But if you're just driving your car to work or on small trips on the weekends, just get the Mini. I think it's more fun. It's got more character. It's got cooler colors. It's very configurable. And it's the best, I think, Mini they've done in the last 20 years in a lot of ways. So I very much recommend the Cooper SE for the ultimate city runabout.
Yeah, you know, before we end this up, I wanted to kind of throw out some other things out there. First and foremost, guys, I have to thank all of our Patreon members. If you notice that there is no commercials in this podcast, I'm really, you know, been listening to a lot of podcasts. I'm really getting sick of commercials. So it's because our patrons out there are helping to support this. So if you want to become a patron, go and check out TFL, patreon.com/TFLcar, and support us in any way you can. We're really grateful for those of you who do. And secondly, you know, we have, like I said, 7 YouTube channels, 4 podcasts. No, 2 podcasts, 4 websites. And we've put all that in one place, tfl-studios.com. So if you're on your phone, just check out tfl-studios.com. And you can basically download that as a web app to your phone, create a little shortcut, and then that stacks up all of the content that we produce. So there's all of our videos, all of our podcasts, all in one place. So if you want to one source shopping center for TFL stuff, it's right there. We get a lot of emails from people asking us, well, what about this? And we've already done the story, or what about that? We've already done the podcast. It's just because it's all over the place. And that's our fault, but we've all put it in one place now.
Yeah, so tfl-studios.com if you want to stay up to date on everything car, truck, off-road classics, and bike-related.
So, Tommy, why didn't we talk about the Rivian, the Cybertruck, or the Lightning?
Well, I'm not sure. Why didn't we talk about those? But we did talk about the Hyundai and the Kia.
Because this is TFL Talk. That's a truck. That's a truck podcast.
Oh, that's right.
Andre's territory. He does a truck podcast.
All right. Well, we'll have to stay tuned and get Andre's impression on what he thinks of the upcoming EV trucks, if they ever get here.
We haven't forgotten about the trucks. And there's other cars. You know, I was like one of my first electric cars that I actually went and drove off road. Period is the Jaguar I-Pace. And yet that one is not exactly setting the world on fire. And I was having a long conversation because I like that car a lot. It's got this kind of unique design language, right? It's kind of...
Yeah, it's really cool looking. Can you still buy one?
Cab forward design language. It also goes off-road, believe it or not, to some extent.
Well, as much as a computer mouse can go off-road.
Well, we took it off-road. I took it off-road. And it did actually pretty well.
Okay.
But yeah, Jaguar came out with that. I think the problem with it was, once again, its range, right? It was, I think they're up to 240 now.
It was like, just very expensive, I think, for what you got out of it.
So that's one that, you know, I think deserves an honorable mention. If you want an electric car, that's certainly overlooked. And I think used may be becoming pretty good value. The other one, of course, that's just out is the Audi e-tron GT and RS. And I actually just test drove those. But I think, you know, if you're an Audi fan, basically it's an Audi version of a Porsche Taycan. Maybe I'm a snob, but I suppose I'm going to spend $160,000. I want the Porsche badge on it.
If you love
the Audi badge, you can go for it.
I-Paces are not as cheap as you'd expect.
And then, of course, Audi is actually doing very well in electrification, right? They've got the e-tron crossover and the Sportback.
Mm-hmm.
Which are fine cars, but they're kind of like, you know.
Also expensive.
They're also expensive, and they're also kind of crossovery. And then we can't forget about GM with their Bolt and their EUV now. GM has just had an $800 million hit to their bottom line because they put out a warning that you can't or you shouldn't charge your Bolt if you've got the first generation indoors because it may start on fire and burn down your house.
But our Spark is good to go, believe it or not.
Our Spark is good to go.
We are good to keep charging that little guy.
So you know, with that kind of warning, you can't really put that on your list.
Yeah.
Even though the new one doesn't have the issue, nevertheless.
I haven't driven the new one yet. I want to drive the new one.
So here's the thing, Tommy. We've begged and begged and begged GM to let us drive one. And because we apparently are a popular media outlet, they say that the vehicle has to go to the Arizona Proving Grounds before they'll give it to us.
Mm.
Except that's like saying, you know, Muffy the cat went to the cat farm, right? It never comes back.
Okay.
Or Roger the dog ran away and he never comes back. Mm. So GM sends these cars apparently to the proving grounds, but they never come back.
So hopefully we'll be able to drive one of those eventually.
Yeah, you know,
that's my goal.
We'd love to get our hands on one.
Yep.
Because you know, it is GM, and of course the other ones we haven't been able to really get much like time with, even though GM does seem to believe that other more popular YouTube channels deserve more time with them, which is fine. I'm not jealous, Tommy.
I can tell, but the
you
Hummer.
Can tell? I'm not
no,
jealous.
We have Andre. Just was
right, but they delivered it to Marcus Brownlee's studio. Both
well,
of them.
Yeah, and but he's got,
I'm not jealous. I'm just saying. I'm not
he's
jealous.
He's got a monster YouTube channel. It's huge. We got a while to go till we're Marcus.
Yeah, I mean, you know, people just use TFL to buy.
Okay, this
to,
is
to
not
make buying decisions on their trucks.
This is not going anywhere.
But I'm not jealous, Tommy. No,
very jealous
about,
over here.
I don't feel bad about it at all, GM.
Very jealous.
You're
so,
not making me feel. You know.
Hopefully, once we get hands on with the Hummer, we'll do it. A full road test, full off-road test, full towing. But I think it's time to end so my dad can go take a grumpy pill.
A chill pill. Go in the Spark EV.
Yes.
Which is another fine GM product. Hint, hint. Nudge, nudge. Does Marcus have a Spark EV?
Probably could buy one immediately if you wanted one.
Does he have one?
I don't know if he could. Well, Everyone should have one.
But has it been featured on his podcast or YouTube channel?
I don't know.
Uh-huh. Where's the love, GM? Where's the love?
Okay, Dad. It sounds like they're selling a lot.
Of Spark EVs.
Yes, exactly.
I think they sold 7,000.
Yeah, and it's not a lot. It's not a lot. But thank you guys for tuning in to the... no, he has not reviewed one. To the TFL...
Well, you better fact check me. That's
TFL
hilarious.
Talk podcast. We will see you next time.
I would have bet my hat that he hasn't reviewed
yes.
one.
We'll see you next time.
How many YouTube channels have done a Spark EV?
We're one of the only ones to really feature it prominently, but there's a reason for it, Dad. It does look like a melon. So we'll see you guys next time, and thank you for watching.
See you guys next time. A juicy, tasty melon, Tom. Yum, yum.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.